Right. So today, what I'd like to do is meditations that are designed as observation meditations. What I mean by that is that if you forget about why we're meditating, if you look at each meditation from its most fundamental activity, that is observation. And generally, what we're observing is the experience of the present moment. Although, if we're observing the mind might be going through the past, for example. So we're observing the mind in the present moment going through the past. And this observation, this witnessing our experience is fundamental to everything. So let's say we are counting the breaths. We're observing the mind counting the breaths. And we're observing the breaths. Let's say we are following the breath. We're observing the breath, and we're aware that we're aware of the breath. So this is where it gets a little bit difficult to explain. So there's not just the act of observation itself, but there's the awareness that I am observing. Let me explain. Let's say I walk along the road, like I did this morning when I was doing my walking meditation, which I transmitted through the wonder of the 60-second videos, which you'll pick up on social media. I think I'll put collect those and put them on YouTube as well. And so as I'm walking along, I'm following the breath. So there I am. My mind is might be wandering and there's things happening around me in the street. But so let's say I've chosen to notice the breath as I'm walking along. Then that's a wonderful thing. I'm aware of the breath, mind wanders, come back to the breath and repeat. And of course, what we're doing is we're training ourselves to notice that our mind's wandered so that we can choose whether that's what we want to do, whether we want to be in mind wandery place or we want to bring our attention to now or we want to focus our minds on something else. That's the key to it all. But as well as that, in the act of observing the breath, am I behaving as though I am the witness of the breath? So that we can't see what it is that's perceiving the breath. So there's no way of looking inwards at this witness of the breath to perceive it. Trying to do that is a useful practice. So, if we're sitting here and we're noticing the breath, we can turn inwards and have a little explore, a little attempt to discover the awareness. And what we'll discover is we can't observe that. Now, the way that I like to explain this now is there's such a thing as augmented reality. And what augmented reality does, let's say you've got an iPhone. Let's say you've got an iPhone and you download an app called AR Dragon. right? And you tap to play it. And you get to choose your dragon. So when you first open the app, you can look around you and you can look for your dragon. And then you can summon your dragon, and you can do that just by pressing a button. Okay. Right, it's all got silly game stuff. I suppose it is a game. There we go. And so what I have to do is I have to look around to see if I can see the dragon. Ah, there we go. And the dragon is up there, like so. Right. So I can only... There we go. And we need to move away to see it because, interestingly, the dragon has been positioned by the software where my head is. So that's probably a little bit of a bug there. And so looking through the phone, I see the room and there's the image of the dragon there. And that's been placed there by the software. You have to try it yourself. I can show you on Saturday when I run a class. And so what I'm going to do is use that as an example. So here I am perceiving my experience without augmented reality. And as I look around, I see the bell, I see the glass, I see the mobile phone, and so on. If I have a cultural perspective, all of these things then have meaning. So, you know, that's a cheap glass. It's a Fuller's London Pride glass. It's only water, by the way. And there's the bell, and the bell is nice. We all like the bell. And there's a mobile phone, and that's relatively modern. So that's a wonderful thing. You notice what's happening. What's happening is those things that I perceive, there's an extra filter, and that filter is adding something to them. In the same way that when I turn on the Dragon app, I'm looking through the camera, so I can still see the room. But lo and behold, when I look through the mobile and through its camera, they've added the dragon to it. Okay, so here's the metaphor. I am the observer. The room is the room. The augmented reality is our cultural filter. And our cultural filter brings meaning to everything. So, you know, good bell, bad bell, expensive glass, cheap glass, modern iPhone, old iPhone, etc., etc. And this augmented reality, this reality that's augmented by our cultural filter, which we've adopted, we then project. You know, this is a word that's used in psychology and by counselors and coaches and trainers. What we're doing is we're projecting the value and meaning of whatever it is onto our environment. And that changes it. Mindfulness is when we stop looking through the augmented reality. Witness consciousness is when I'm aware that I'm not looking through the augmented reality. And also when I'm aware that I am. And I've learned the difference. And I learned that difference not through any smart thinking, but merely through observation. If we practice enough, we witness our experience, we look around us, we become increasingly more sensitive to an emotional response that we have to anything, doesn't matter what it is. So this is the thing. I think I mentioned this on Thursday and Saturday to somebody. It was either the group or to somebody in the class, that meditation doesn't confer an immunity to perceiving our experience colored by our culture and value system and so on. What it does is it creates a threshold of sensitivity so that when we notice there's an intense emotional or cognitive response to something, so we experience something and there's an emotion, we notice that. And the emotion is the result of the good, bad, right, wrong, fair, unfair, old, new, valuable, not valuable, etc., etc. And this whole process is done through a process of observation. And then we're closer not just to mindfulness, but we're closer to living life with the awareness of the difference between mindfulness and the experience with our cultural filter on and with our personal like, dislike, good, bad, fair, unfair. And this is really, I think, what they're trying to say when they say that if there's a definition of mindfulness, which is that it's noticing our present moment experience without judgment. But I don't think they do a very good job of explaining that, because one word doesn't do it. And I'm hoping that this particular explanation and these meditations will help. So this is one of the reasons the bell works. No cultural filter. If instead of this sort of bell, I had used a town crier's bell, or I had sounded a set of bells like you get in a church, your mind would have associated that. But because these bells are from the East and we're from the West, there isn't a cultural association. So what happens is we look through the filter, the cultural filter, and we just notice this sound. And we notice it's moving through time. And we notice we're here. So we can do that now. If you'd just like to get yourselves comfortable. We'll begin by checking in with our physiology and adopting an open, balanced and relaxed posture, with the head balanced comfortably on top of the spine and the elbows by the side, pulling the shoulders down comfortably. And we become aware of the breath rising and falling. And we observe the breath moving through time. Belly rising, belly falling. Any tension that arises, allow yourself to release it on the out breath, just by extending the out breath. By making the out breath audible. Belly rising, belly falling. Okay, so what we're going to do now is a little exercise in observing the cultural filters. And to do this, ideally, you need a shiny object. Now, if you don't have a shiny object, any object will do. So it doesn't matter what it is. So I've got a glass or a bowl here. I can use either of those. And I've chosen to use the bowl. And so the bowl is on the desk in front of me. But as long as the shiny object is somewhere around about 45 degrees down from the center line of looking in front of you, then that's fine. And in this exercise, it's useful for us to not lean our heads down. And you might find yourself doing that. It's not critical, but it means if you don't lean your head forward, you won't get neck ache. And so there's the bowl on the desk in front of me. And I'm going to focus my gaze on it. And the way I'll do that is by half opening the eyes. So I can't actually see anything above where my hand is if I put my arm right out in front of me. So I put my arm right out in front of me. I can just see my hand, but if I lift my hand, it's hidden by the eyelids. And I fix my gaze on the bowl. And as I said, it doesn't really matter what you focus on. It's helpful if it's a shiny object, but if it's not, it doesn't really matter. It could be anything. And I just leave my gaze on the bowl. So the first thing will happen is the mind will make some judgments about this, whether it's a good or bad thing to do, useful, not useful, helpful, pointless, whatever it might happen to be. And what happens when we look at an object is its meaning arises in our mind initially. We might think to ourselves, here I am looking at a bowl, along with any emotional consequences of that. It's a good thing, it's not a good thing, it's helpful, it's not helpful, whatever it might happen to be. So the activity itself may be judged. And then the bowl, of course, it is an object. It has utility. I use it to create sound with. And so whether I appreciate it or not will colour my judgment to the bowl. And so it'll either be a bowl I like or a bowl I don't like or whatever it might happen to be. And so then some experiences with the bowl might arise, memories of one sort or another. But I continue looking at the bowl. What I'm doing is what we call resting our gaze on the bowl. So we're not scrutinizing it in detail. We're not focusing on it hard. There it is. And our eyes are positioned. through that, throughout all of this experience. Whatever arises in the mind might wander. You might drift into the semi-dream slate. None of that matters. Whenever you notice you're distracted in any way, you return your attention to the bowl. So we continue gazing at the bowl, and what happens over time is that details in the bowl become more defined. So in my case, my eyes have chosen to move to a place where there's a particular reflection of light. It seems to enjoy that more than any of the other places where there's a reflection of light. And the detail that our mind has chosen to fix on seems to separate itself from what it is we're perceiving. So although we're looking at the bowl, the mind has picked out that detail to the exclusion of anything else.
And then eventually, over time, the detail of whatever it is that the eye has selected to focus on becomes everything. And so in my case, it's the reflection of the lights in the bowl. There's just a couple of little points of light surrounded by a lighter area. And the detail becomes colours, contrasts, the shape of the detail. And the visual elements of it, any reflection, any bright areas, dark areas, shading, shade, light, dark. And so when we experience that, we're experiencing it as what it is. It doesn't carry any of the baggage. Of the bowl itself or the object that you've chosen. And of course, through that process, you'll also notice it's a meditation. The mind wanders. You notice, you bring your attention back to the point of focus throughout it. So we still get all of the benefits of a focused attention mindfulness practice, and we also notice this slipping away of the cultural meaning of the object, memories associated to it, whatever it is we manage to notice. So gently returning your attention to sound from vision, turning your attention to your surroundings. So that was a clarity meditation, and the clarity practice is there to help us to become aware of the augmented reality, which is actually the natural human response to our environment. You know, our ancestors, good orange, bad orange, good mango, bad mango, ripe fruit, unripe fruit. But the application of these filters to everything, I'm confident, wouldn't have been so deeply embedded as in our culture and our lives. So it's very, very good to see through these. And this is the way that it's done. Okay. So that's it for tonight.
The hunter-gatherer paradox is that we may as well have been plucked out of nature and deposited unceremoniously in the modern world. We have not evolved for the modern world. There are a lot of things that large parts of the population experience, which is a product of the natural environment, lactose intolerance being one of those things. If you are from certain ethnic groups, then you'll have lactose intolerance, and in other ethnic groups you won't, which is a product of how long your ancestors have been consuming cow's milk. Now, the thing is, when we hear about that, we think, oh, that's a little irrelevant thing. But this actually applies to everything. It applies to our physiology and our psychology. We're the product of our ancestors in a lot of ways. Now, the thing is about these traits, they're not fundamentals, but what it does prove is that we're shaped by living in nature. And our physiology is a consequence of living in nature. And that natural environment isn't the modern artificial environment. But it's not just about the environment. It's also about the modern world, connection with others, or more relevant, lack of connection with others. So if we look back at our hunter-gatherer friends, they have very distinct personalities and they are perceived in a certain way. Everybody has some skill somewhere or another, and so they are attached to that skill. They might be the best hunter, they might be the best person at finding the honeybees' nests, they might be the best person at finding a particular fruit or fishing or making the best arrowheads or something. Everybody has some skill, and so that skill is seen as part of who they are, but overall their character is the thing that distinguishes them. Now, the thing is about the small group cultures is they're a lot tighter, and who you are develops within the group in front of everybody. In the modern world, we're constantly meeting new people with a different cultural perspective, and I'm not talking about people from different countries. Every family has a different cultural perspective. There's just a different set of responses to particular experiences. And because we're constantly iterating through this, meeting new people, having new experiences, connecting or not connecting or disconnecting in different ways, our physiology and our psychology is designed for a world where that doesn't happen. The lack of a tribe, the lack of the small group who are so deeply, intimately connected in the ways that our ancestors were, creates for us an undeniable feeling of separation. And it's not all that unusual, getting on for 50% of the population, feel lonely some or all of the time. And one of the many things that we've learned is that this loneliness isn't a product of being isolated per se, although obviously if for any reason you are isolated, you'll become lonely. It's more a product of how connected we feel and how fulfilling our interactions are with other people. And so this lack of fulfilling connection, this lack of sense of connection in a group, leaves us feeling separate, rejected, isolated, and lonely. Pick one, pick all, sometimes, all time, occasionally, doesn't really matter. And I think this is the fundamental challenge, which is never discussed or even accepted, but it's undeniable. This is the fundamental challenge of the modern world, is our ability to connect. I was chatting to somebody earlier and it popped into my mind. Let's say I could just sprinkle connection dust on everybody in the world. Then the Israelis would connect to the Palestinians, and the Ukrainians would connect to the Russians, and the Chinese and the Americans would connect, and all of these people who are squabbling interminably about ideology and what's right and wrong and true and false and moral and ethical and so on and so forth would connect, wouldn't the world be a different place? I'm beginning to sound a little bit like John Lennon here, but I'm not actually talking about necessarily the need to love everybody, although that's a wonderful thing. It's more about how separate we see ourselves from everybody else. And I have come to learn from speaking to various meditators who've taken all sorts of different paths, experience, other side of the world, secular, spiritual meditation, blah-de-blah-de-blah. It heals our sense of disconnection. And that starts with the body, connect to our emotions, they stop becoming something to avoid and start to become part of us. And same with our thoughts, and then the thoughts and emotions of others begin to make sense. They don't make sense in that we can discern exactly what somebody else is thinking, or even that there's any logic behind it. It's more a matter of the recognition that very often there's no logical foundation to whatever somebody might be doing, no benefit to them or anybody else. They're doing it because of the confusion that has caused them to feel the way they are. And then when you feel that confusion yourself and that discomfort, then it's easy to empathize, and it makes more sense that people do and say things that aren't necessarily helpful. And once we get over that hurdle, then we're in a far better place. And this all happens through connection to the body. And so I'm not going to do anything different. The usual sorts of meditations. Don't know which ones I'll do, but all of them, they're all connecting us to the present moment, to the body, to the mind, to others, and to nature. So if you just like to get yourselves comfortable, and we can all connect to the present moment through the power of the bell, as it moves through time, and as we follow it through time. We've all learned to, in our own way, follow that sound into the experience of becoming aware of the present moment, passing through time, either through sound or through an awareness of the breath. Or through the passage of thoughts in the mind, moving through time. And what this does is it brings us into the present moment and brings us into our bodies. This experience of being present, being within our body, in the modern world, we spend little time in our bodies and little or no time at the intersection of time and our location in space. But that awareness of time passing and that awareness of our physical presence I have no doubt is how our ancestors would have spent much of their lives. And the breath is central to this experience of now. Because it achieves both of those objectives. We become aware of the passage of time. Through the cycles of the breath. And it connects us to our physiology, to our bodies, to being right here, right now. And then the question arises, how do we connect to this? And the answer lies in the chin mudra. If we make the connection between the fingers and thumbs as light as we possibly can, so light that it's as if the first finger and thumb isn't actually touching. Then we're learning light touch focus. And that light, soft, gentle focus on the breath is how we witness its cycle. So this isn't a sharp, deep, focused concentration. It's a light, soft, gentle awareness. Where you're aware of the breath is up to you. You can notice the breath in the belly, sense the breath filling and emptying the chest. Notice the breath entering and leaving the nostrils. It's all totally up to you. It's also useful to connect, to hook into the out breath, to release tension in the body. So if you have an open, balanced and relaxed posture, which you achieve by generally moving your elbows back to find the spot at which the head balances naturally, most comfortably on the top of the spine. rising, belly falling. And it's fine for the mind to drift away from the experience of now, because we're training ourselves to notice that. So that's what repeats in a meditation. The mind wandering, we notice, bring our attention back. That moment of noticing is known as the moment of recognition. And we repeat it over and over again as we meditate. And incrementally over time, we then become more aware of our mind wandering. And then we can choose to return it back to our present moment experience. Nothing to be done. It's just a practice of witnessing, noticing the experience of the present moment and noticing that we've stopped noticing it and returning back to noticing it. And sometimes the mind wanders so much that we might prefer a practice to keep it engaged that still keeps us present. So we have the mantras, we have counting the breaths, we have noting thought when thought arises. And we can combine them. So what we're doing is counting the breaths. We're just noticing the breath. We'll stay with the breath for a few moments, just noticing the cycle. And then we count the breaths. One on the in-breath, two on the out-breaths. Three on the in-breath, four on the out-breath, up to 10. Reach 10, begin at 1. When we notice that we've lost count, what we do is label it. We're acknowledging that thought. So the mind may have wandered or a thought has arisen. And so we're acknowledging that thought. That's what one of the things that labeling or noting does. And we say in the mind, thinking. Then back to the breath, counting the breaths, one on the in-breath, two on the out-breath, three on the out-in-breath, four on the out-breath, up to 10, reach 10, begin at 1. We lose count, saying in the mind, thinking, and back to 1. This is a combination of counting the breaths, and noting or labeling thoughts. Just practice that for the next few minutes. Again, noticing how sound and the breath synchronize, all moving through time at the same speed. As does the sound of the bell. You're ready, gently return your attention to your surroundings. So that is an exercise in practicing how our genetic blueprint operates for us. We're slipping back into a state of being that is part of our genetic heritage. This is what happens when we go into nature. Presence, mindfulness, experience of the present moment. Okay, so bless you all and catch up soon